Hello and welcome to Horse World Connect. My name is Lola Michelin, and today I have the great pleasure of speaking with Karen Jones from Motivational Horsemanship, and she's going to be sharing a little bit about her journey and her business. Karen, thank you so much for taking out time today to share with our listeners.
Oh, thank you, Lola, so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to this.
Excellent. Well, let's just start by helping people get to know you. So could you tell them a little bit about your credentials, your training?
Well, let's see. I would just have to say I'm a true student of the horse. I have had horses for over 55 years. I was in the performance world for over 30. And I would call myself a horse welfare advocate for over the last 25 years at least, maybe longer than that.
Fantastic. And I've had the pleasure of perusing your website, and I know you have so many different things that you offer, that you can offer to not just our members, but just horse people in general. And but what fascinated me most was what brought you to this work, or at least what was a big part of your evolution, and that was your relationship with a very special horse. Can you tell me how you met Rhett?
Rhett. What all can be said about this boy, I'll tell you. I met him after casually mentioning to a friend who then mentioned it to another friend and then to another friend that I was beginning to think about what the next horse in my horsemanship journey might be, what breed, what type of horse might help improve my riding abilities. And so I was thinking about a Baroque or a Spanish horse. For some reason, the photographs of the Lipizzans in the Spanish School of Riding and horses in working equitation, just something about that really drew me to it. And so the friend of the friend of the friend messaged me on Facebook and mentioned that she knew of a 7-year-old Lipizzan cross gelding in the Nashville, Tennessee area that was up for adoption from the Lipizzan Rescue Foundation. And I'm just a little bit south of Atlanta, so that would be about a 5 to 6 hour drive, you know, doable for me to go and meet this horse if it was possible. So the friend of the friend of the friend rounded up some pictures, sent me a few pictures of him, and I liked what I saw in the standing photograph. So I arranged a little girl's trip for us to go up in August of 2013 to Nashville and to meet Rhett. And the moment we laid eyes on each other, literally the moment we saw each other, we both knew. I was there for him and he was there for me. I didn't know in what capacity. I thought I was the big savior to come in and I'll be the one. So I submitted an application for his adoption to the Lipizzan Rescue Foundation in September of 2013. I was approved and I picked him up in Tennessee in October of 2013. And I'll tell you, this should have been my first clue. I got there on October the 8th with literally, a pair of jeans, a change of undergarments, and a t-shirt because I thought I was arriving one day and leaving the next.
Going home.
No. It took us 3 days to get him on the trailer to bring him home. And I should have known then that, wow, I've got a lot to learn, or I've got a lot to teach. I didn't really know at the time, which one it was. So that's how we met.
Wonderful. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are resonating with that right now, because I know in my own life, I think I've shared with you that I have had 3 horses in my life that showed up, all 3 white horses, none of which were mine I didn't purchase them, but they would just kind of show up at a time in my life when I needed a teacher and when I also thought I had something to offer. And none of them were the horses that I would have chosen for myself at the time, but they all proved to be so influential in my life. And I'm sure many other people share the same story. So I know there's lots of heads out there nodding and anxious to hear the next chapter. Once you got Rhett home, what unfolded for you and him?
Well, you know, I knew a little of his backstory, but I really didn't realize how deep his mental and emotional scars were buried. I had no idea. And though I had lots and lots of tools in my toolbox for dealing with at the time, I thought just about anything that a horse might show me or throw at me, as the case would be, I did not have the tools for handling this one. He had been badly neglected, abused, and traumatized by nearly every person in his short life. He was only seven, had just turned seven when I got him. And he was 4 years old when he was seized and rescued by the state of Wisconsin as a four-year-old stallion. He had been living in a 20 by 20 box stall, never being turned out, with two other horses for almost 2 years, 20 months.
Wow.
And one of those horses was his mother, and he was a stallion. But the pictures that were sent to me of him when the day he was seized, you would have thought he was a long yearling because he, you know, none of his nutritional needs had been met. Certainly his social needs had not been met. At that point, he had not had a lot of handling. And because he was a stallion and he was 4 years old, and I guess people just thought, well, he's a stallion. We have to handle him like a stallion. So he was mishandled and abused, as far as I'm concerned. Over the years, I've had so many people come forward that knew him in his previous life, knew him in some of the fosters that he'd been in, and they were just shocked that I hadn't been killed in actuality, just due to what they had known about him. After numerous training attempts with several different trainers, and I put that word in quotes, and fosters, euthanasia was recommended on three different occasions for him for his dangerous and violent and unpredictable outbursts. And I saw them firsthand. His default when I got him was to stand on his hind legs and walk towards you, striking. That was his default. And if that didn't work to slow you down on whatever you might be asking of him, he would just throw himself to the ground.
It's interesting how I think that behavior, which I've also seen in horses in my life, it reminds me of dogs who get to the point where their only option for defense is to bite. And they don't have that language anymore that horses and dogs are so good at giving you so many warnings and so many signals that I need help or I need something different. And when they default to that drastic of a behavior, you just know that their whole life they've been trying to have a conversation that it has been in an echo chamber, like they just haven't had somebody able to listen to them. I always try to myself reserve judgment when I hear about horses that are kept in the conditions you describe, or kept, you know, in a way that doesn't give them the type of physical and social and mental exercise and stimulation that they need. And yet I know that it's often well-intended. It's often just, you know, lack of knowledge or ignorance, but nonetheless, the horse comes out of it traumatized, whether the people were well-meaning or intentional in their neglect, the horse suffers the same. So obviously you and Rhett have walked a long road together, but you've come out the other side with a tremendous relationship. Can you tell me today what it's like living with Rhett?
You know, I am amazed every day. I am truly amazed every day at the trust that this horse has given me, and the gratefulness that is bestowed to me from him for helping him find his way out of that dark hole that he was in. Mm-hmm. And as you said, a hole that, who knows whether it was intentionally or unintentionally, you know, there. It was a dark hole nonetheless. And I had no idea when I adopted him that he would influence and change my horsemanship training and teaching path. I mean, you know, I thought I was going to come in as the one who knows everything, and I was going to teach him everything he needed to know, and he was going to be a riding horse. And because he still to this day doesn't belong to me, he belongs to the Lipizzan Rescue Foundation. He always will. Yes. I am his guardian. I am his caretaker. Not that they would never ever want him back. Although Matt, now they might. But you know, it's amazing. He has taught me and continues to teach me that when we understand the basics of equine behavior and how horses really learn and retain information, then the better we're able to understand what our horses are trying to tell us. And then we learn to listen and accept their teachings. So I'm a firm, firm believer that the trainer and the handler must understand how horses think and how they learn, or they do run the risk of intentionally or unintentionally becoming forceful or abusive in their training. It's just human nature to control and dominate. It's how predators stay alive. And we're dealing with prey animals that just simply want to get along. They just want to get along. So one of the things I teach is as humans, it's easier for us to learn to adapt our behavior instead of making the horse adapt his or hers to us. And this in turn produces a trusting, safer, more productive, more communicative and a connected relationship. So that's what Rhett has taught me and continues to teach me. And it's what I share with my students.
And I know that in our conversations, we've talked about the fact that, and I know that you employ many, many different styles and tools in your approach to horses and people and the relationship between them. So we've talked about clicker training and the benefits of that, and also some of the dangers of that. And we've talked about different forms of horsemanship and classical training. And I know you and I share the same feeling. Me, in my approach to body work, having to have many, many tools in my toolbox so that if one horse needs acupressure versus massage versus, you know, a hands-off modality, or if they need some sort of mechanical tool to help them with balancing both their physical and spiritual body, that that you have to have those many tools. And I was really drawn to the message that you were putting out, that in each of the relationships, whether you're, you know, coaching somebody or you're working with a horse, that you have to let the horse have a say in what tools are going to work for them, because no one method, no one process is going to fit every horse. And in many cases, it's multiple processes. So can you tell me about the three things that are kind of the centerpiece of your business? And I know you have many more than just these three, and perhaps those will be future interviews or maybe regular contributions on your part. But what are the three focuses for your what you offer other people and their horses?
Well, I have a large base of students that have been with me for quite a while. So they've been with me through all of my path changes. And so I have a beautiful mix of them that some of them want to be able to add positive reinforcement in. Others want guidance of a different kind. And, you know, during my in-person lessons, whether they're private lessons or group lessons or workshops or clinics, or my long-distance video coaching program, they're both personalized and unique to the individual in front of me in the moment. Because it's not a step-by-step method or program. It can't be. Because if we're in the present moment with our horses, things change in a nanosecond. And so I have to be able to pull out different tools, not just for what the horse needs, but what the human needs. Remember, I'm dealing with two different personalities at one time. I'm dealing with the human's personality and what they need, not what they want. And I'm dealing with the horse's personality, what they need more than what they want. What they want will come at the end once you give them what they need. And the need that I see the most, Lola, in everybody is the basic foundation of just good horsemanship. Good horsemanship.
Yeah, and we often, as a horsewoman, I know myself, I've often found myself in this situation where I think I know what the horse needs. But there's the you know, your known knowns and your unknown knowns, and then the unknown unknown. that, again, the best intentions, you may need another set of eyes that can help look at that relationship and say, okay, there's a need not being met on one side of the equation, maybe the horse, maybe the rider, and then being able to kind of bring it to their consciousness. So like you said, so we can all get what we want together, but first we have to have that need, right? Root chakra, got to have that root chakra satisfied before we can really go into any kind of creative space or communicative space even, right? We can't communicate with our horse if we don't feel safe, feel grounded, and if they don't feel safe and grounded. So, and so I love the fact that you have opportunities for people both in person, because so many people really want that one-on-one or just the being physically present, but you also offer some great online coaching. And I have to mention my favorite thing. I know that one of the things that I'm going to be tapping into you about is your willingness and your ability to research things for people. Like anything a person wants to know about horses, nutrition, horsemanship, whatever the latest concern is for them, you will go out and do the hard work, the deep dive to compile information for them on any subject. And I can see, we're able to see one another, even if the listeners aren't, and I can see the volumes and volumes and volumes of books behind you. So I know that you have tremendous tools when it comes to research, and that is something unique. I have not seen other people offering that. Can you just very quickly tell us how you offer that to people?
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's really interesting because it's just part of who I am as a horsewoman. Before I got deeply involved in the sciences of training and behavior, so pre-ret, even before that, you know, when I would see a horse buck or run off with a rider, immediately I'd think, well, now something caused that. I wonder if it was saddle fit or, you know, the way the bit sat in the mouth or something like that. So those kind of things have always fascinated me anyway. Why does something happen? And so the research just comes naturally to me. Somebody will say something that it might be not even to me. I might be listening on the fringes of a conversation. And all of a sudden I'll go, well, I wonder why that is. Mm-hmm. And it's just research and knowing why things happen has always fascinated me since I was very, very young. So as you said, we can see the volumes and volumes and volumes of books and DVDs behind me, and every one of them is read and every DVD is watched, because the more information I have, the more information I'm armed with before I meet a horse and rider or before I see them again for the second time or the third time or the 100th time, the better off I am to be able to help them. And truth be told, I'm a shareaholic. I love to help people. It's my passion to teach and help people. And so I, you know, it doesn't matter. It can be what type of equipment? What is the best ropes? What kind of whips? Where do you get your training sticks from? What type of rope? What size rope? I already have all those answers that I've compiled over years and years and years. And of course, I go back and update when I find something I like better. I might go in and pull something out of my research files, but I have files and files and files of research, you know, by topic. And it's almost never ending. And, you know, here's the biggest thing. What people don't realize is that time is your biggest commodity. It's the one thing you can never get back. Right. And you can go down a rabbit hole researching, because there's many, many times I end up watching kitten videos on YouTube when I'm supposed to be looking up, you know, some type of a bidding system or something for somebody. And I know how valuable people's time is. So let me research it for you. It's already something I do. It's probably already something that might already be in my files. And it gives me joy to be able to help you and save you time.
Well, and you know, I think that I'm going to just say this to our Horse World Connect masterminds that might be listening in. This is a service that I know I am going to utilize a lot, because in our businesses today, it's so important that we're having some sort of social media presence, whether it's blog posts or podcasts or, you know, the things that Horse World Connect offers to our members, and being able to have a podcast, being able to have blogs that we can get out to your potential clients and your existing clients. And to do those things regularly, you have to be able to have the references, the studies, the tools, the links to help people pursue that information. It's not just enough to tell them your anecdotal experience or your knowledge about it. I'm speaking for myself, like as a podcaster, I want to also back it up with research and where can they go and read about it or find the tool. So, but you know, that takes a lot of time. So I know for those of you out there that podcast or blog or just want to exchange information with your clients to help them take better care of their animals, you need a research buddy. And I'm so glad that I found you as my research buddy. So, just in closing, I want to wrap it up, but I really appreciate you sharing the story of Rhett and also taking the 7 years to develop a relationship with him that now helps so many others and reverberates through so many people's lives. I think that's really, really special. And if you listeners want to learn more about Rhett or see pictures of him, you can visit Karen's website. We'll give you the information here in a moment and see his pictures and more about his story with Karen, which I really recommend that you do. So lastly, I just want to help people get connected to you. And I know that you have made a very generous offer for Horse World Connect club members. And that is a complimentary consultation with you to talk about whatever they want to talk about with their horses or the research they're interested in or their businesses. And that is a $100 value that they're going to get free from you as members of Horse World Connect. So I really appreciate your generosity in that. And I hope people will take the opportunity to reach out to you. So if they want to learn more about you, your business, Rhett, and all that we've talked about today, how do they reach out to you?
Well, they can easily visit my website at www.motivationalhorsemanship.com. And all of my social media links are at the top of the page and at the bottom of the page. Great. You can send an email to Karen@motivationalhorsemanship.com. And in the subject line, just put Horse World Connect Consultation, and I'll know exactly where this came from. And I would be more than happy to talk to new members, old members, anybody that wants to talk horse. I am available and ready to do it.
Wonderful. Well, thanks again so much for your time today. And hopefully we'll be hearing more from you. If you liked this interview, please comment on our Horse World Connect Facebook page or at the Horse World Connect podcast if you want to join our subscription or subscribe to our feed for our podcast so you can listen to more great stuff. We are hoping to get Karen on more often to share her wonderful talents. And if you liked this, let us know so that we can encourage her to become part of our podcast team. Okay, thanks for listening. And make sure to visit Horse World Connect and stay current with our information and podcasts. And Karen, I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much, Lola. I enjoyed this so much. You are just a delight to speak with.
Thank you. Hi, this is Lola Michelin from Horse World Connect, and I bet you didn't know this.
Horses have a trifocal lens. This lens enables them to be able to see up close, medium distance, and long distance away. So when you see a horse put his head up in the air, it's because he's trying to look out of the bottom of his eye to see the longest distance away. The middle of his eye sees a medium distance, and then when he drops his eye to the ground to look at the water puddle, you'll know that he's using his close-up part of his eye to see depth.
See? I bet you didn't know that.